The next case this morning is number 042098, Johnson against Pernod Ricard, USA. Ms. Smith.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Sheila Smith, and I represent the plaintiff, Kathleen Johnson, in this disparate treatment Title VII case involving her request to be rehired at the Lawrenceburg Distillery after she quit. There is really only a single issue on appeal here. A lot of different issues have been raised, but it really comes down to whether or not Thomas Johnson, Owen Cross, and David Richter are similarly situated to the plaintiff and whether a reasonable jury could so conclude. We believe the answer to that is yes, and that this is a jury question, and that summary judgment was improperly granted. Now, we don't really have any novel issues of law here. To determine who is similarly situated to a Title VII plaintiff is well recognized in Seventh Circuit law, and we simply look at what the relevant factors are in the comparison. And those relevant factors are dependent on the context of the case. We are not required to show complete identity of circumstances between the plaintiff and the comparators. This is simply not the law. We must show substantial similarity, but we do not need to show identical circumstances.
Yeah, but you have to show that there is agreement on the most critically important issues in the case. And here, your client apparently walked off the job and quit and didn't check with anybody in management before doing that. And was there anybody else who did that and then was voluntarily rehired? That Mr. Johnson seems to have been a little different situation.
Well, we contend that Mr. Johnson is such a comparator because he had been disciplined four times previously for walking off the job without permission. He had been told that day.
It's
no, he didn't quit.
That's different. So leaving work early and quitting are different, aren't they?
Well, they may be, but I think in the context of this case, they are not. And that is because John Salvain, the decision maker in this case, testified that he told Kathleen Johnson he couldn't rehire her because, quote, the precedent that would set where we had people walking off the job or quitting one day, then coming back and expecting us to rehire them the next. So John Salvain, the decision maker, equated those two as both being situations where he would not want to set the precedent of rehiring people. Problem is, he did set that precedent with Thomas Johnson. In fact, he set that precedent four times with Thomas Johnson because he was the one that suspended Johnson three times previously and then fired him for leaving the job without permission. We also do have a comparator, Owen Cross, who effectively quit and then requested 9 months later to be rehired, and John Salvain rehired him. So whether we are looking at the relevant factors as being just comparators who quit, we have a comparator like that, or comparators who walked off the job without permission. We have two comparators like that. So I think based on the articulated reason for this decision, both of those situations are similar to plaintiff's situation. I'd like to point out two things about these comparators. Owen Cross, the district court erred in this analysis because the court misconstrued the facts, the undisputed facts regarding Owen Cross. Owen Cross had been on layoff and had bypassed recall twice. By bypassing recall the second time, he lost his seniority and lost all rights to be recalled at all ever again. He affirmatively asked to be rehired, and the company rehired him. The district court, however, found that he returned to work because the company recalled him after he had bypassed two times. That is not what the undisputed facts are.
What difference does it make?
It makes a difference because Owen Cross voluntarily gave up his right to employment, and that makes him similar to Kathleen Johnson.
He didn't quit, though. He was laid off. He found another job and declined subsequent opportunities to be rehired. How does that make him similar to your client?
It's similar because he had a right under the collective bargaining agreement to be recalled to employment at the company.
And declining that right is not the same thing as quitting.
Well,
not even remotely the same.
We're contending that it is, and that it is.
How?
Because he had a right to employment at that company, and he voluntarily gave it up. Kathleen Johnson, while she was still there, had a right to continued employment with that company, and she voluntarily gave it up. And they did it by two different mechanisms, but they both voluntarily gave up their right to employment at the company. And so that's why we contend that Owen Cross is similar to Kathleen Johnson. And that if the district court had accurately construed the facts in this case, the district court would have found that that was the case. With respect to Thomas Johnson, the court made a fundamental error because it found that Thomas Johnson was similarly situated to Kathleen Johnson for purposes of establishing a prima facie case. But then completely disregarded that finding with respect to the pretext analysis. And in a disparate treatment case like this, you can use evidence from the prima facie case to also establish pretext. And the district court completely disregarded that. If the court had acknowledged that, then the motion for summary judgment would have been denied.
What is it exactly about the company's stated reason for not rehiring her that was pretextual?
The company said they did not want to set a precedent by rehiring somebody who had walked off the job or quit. And we presented three prior cases where they had done just that.
I thought it was just one, Mr. Johnson.
Well, Mr. Johnson, Owen Cross, and David Richter. We're contending that all three are similarly situated and that all three cases set the very precedent they said they would not set.
But the other two did not quit.
That's correct.
Or did not walk off the job. Only Mr. Johnson did?
No, David Richter also walked off the job without permission. He was not under any disciplinary action at the time, so they did allow him to come back.
Had he been told affirmatively that he needed to stay and speak to management before leaving?
No, he did not. No, he was not, and that's why they allowed him back.
Is that not permissible?
It is permissible, as long as they treat Kathleen Johnson the same way. And we believe that they did not because there is at least a material issue of fact as to whether or not she was told not to leave by a supervisor. There is evidence in the record that a union steward told her not to leave, but she disputes that and testified that he didn't say anything like that. He said nothing to her after she said, "I quit, I'm leaving." So there's at least a question of fact as to whether or not anyone in authority told her not to leave. And if the jury resolves that question in her favor, then she is similarly situated to both Richter and Thomas Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. We'll hear now from Mr. Johnson.
May it please the Court, my name is Eric Johnson. I represent the appellee, Pernod Ricard USA. Although we stand by the various arguments that we raised in our appellee's brief, we want to focus on an argument on two issues that we think are fatal to plaintiff's case here. The first is plaintiff's failure to show that there are any substantially similarly situated individuals outside the protected class. And failing that test, the appellees contend that plaintiffs fail to prove that anything about the stated reasons given for the plaintiffs, the refusal to rehire plaintiff, was pretext. This case cannot be separated from the critical controlling fact. Plaintiff showed up at work on 9/27/01, got into a dispute regarding whether she would be assigned to work on a particular forklift, got angry, jumped off, stormed out of the plant saying, "I'm going to quit." Didn't come back, didn't make any contact with the company for 11 days. The plaintiff disputes that says there's an issue of fact as to whether her union supervisor told her not to leave on the way out. If you look at the evidence, what the plaintiff really says is, "I don't remember if anybody said anything to me." That's not enough to create an issue of fact when the person who said it says, "I told her not to leave." And she says, "I don't remember." That doesn't raise an issue of fact. But the plaintiff, the controlling fact is that she just walked off the job and quit. On the prima facie case, in order to show that another employee is substantially similarly situated, the other employee must be directly comparable in all material respects, including the conduct of the employee. The attempted comparison to Owen Cross is just without merit. Owen Cross was riffed. He did not quit. He was riffed. He got another job. They called him back, said, "You want your job back?" "No, I've got another job." They called him back, "Do you want your job back?" "No, I've got another job." Eventually, he decided he wanted to go back, and he wanted to work there. Not only was this in 1997, 4 years before the plaintiff, which brings the temporal difference, in my mind, raises the question whether you can even draw a substantial comparison, but riffing and then accepting a job later is completely different than quitting. He didn't walk off the job. He didn't quit. Totally not a comparison. Turning to Dave Richter, on August 31st, 2000, Mr. Richter got into disagreement regarding whether he'd work with a new employee. Comes into work, he's assigned a new employee, says, "I don't want to work with new employees," basically. Apparently, he was tired of working with new employees. He asked for an absence slip. His supervisor says, "You don't need an absence slip, you're already at work." Apparently, he wanted to call in sick after he'd gotten to work because he didn't want to work with the new employee. He says, "I'm going to go home." His supervisor doesn't say, "No, you're not." His supervisor says, "I'm not mad. I understand what you're saying." And he eventually got up. Mr. Richter got up and left the work site. He returned. He didn't say, "I quit." He announced no intention of quitting. And he returned the next day. That's very different than somebody who walks out of the plant, says, "I'm quitting," and doesn't come back for 11 days. The closest thing the plaintiffs have to anybody who they could even arguably compare is Mr. Johnson. And the failing with Mr. Johnson is that, once again, Mr. Johnson did not quit. Mr. Johnson, on November 15, 1999, almost 2 years prior to the situation involving the plaintiff, had worked a full shift, and he was told that he was going to have to work overtime. This was on a Friday afternoon, I believe, and he was scheduled to start a suspension period on Monday. He got angry when he said he was going to have to work overtime, and he says, "I'm going to start a suspension period on Monday. Go ahead and add some time to it. I don't care." He didn't say, "I quit." He didn't say, "Fire me." He said, "Punish me further. I'm not going to work overtime." And once again, that is different than an employee who just walks off the job and says, "I quit," has no further contact with the employer. And why is that different? The reason it's different is because an employee who walks off the job and quits has removed herself from the employer's control. She has taken control. She has announced her intention to quit. The company at that point in time has absolutely no recourse, can't put her in the disciplinary system, can't punish her. Mr. Johnson didn't take that step. He said, "Suspend me further, I don't care." He stayed within the control of the disciplinary system, and he was punished, he was fired, and ultimately reinstated. But, once again, he did not say that "I quit," and that's the controlling factor that the plaintiffs cannot get around in this case, is that when you walk off a job and say, "I quit," and don't come back for 11 days, what's the employer supposed to think? What's the employer supposed to do? Even if plaintiff gets past the prima facie.
I think if the company really is concerned about setting a bad precedent, it seems to me that this Johnson, that first of all, there's way too many Johnsons in this case. You're a Johnson, it's comparable as a Johnson, and the plaintiff's a Johnson. But it seems to me they set just as bad a precedent by taking Mr. Johnson back with this horrid record that he has than Mrs. Johnson, who just said, maybe in a fit of pique, you know, I quit and walked off the job. I mean, if that's the big concern, we don't want to set a bad precedent. I think they set an equally, the precedent is pretty similar no matter who they.
Your Honor, I have three responses to that. First, like I've already distinguished Johnson from, I mean, Mr. Johnson from Ms. Johnson. The second difference is that the plaintiff has twisted Mr. Salvain's testimony. He starts his testimony by saying, you know, I didn't want to set the precedent of people just walking off the job and quitting and thinking they can get their job back. But if you look at the appendix for Pernod Ricard on page 42, it's page 17 of Salvain's deposition, and he's asked, is the precedent different, basically, if someone says, I quit, versus they just walk off? And he says, I see it as being different. And he says, I don't think it's right, but I think it's different. So he testified, on the one hand, he started by with a little more broadly, a broader issue, and then he narrowed it in, ultimately, and the plaintiffs have failed to focus on that because they don't want to draw the court's attention to it. But my third response to that is, we've got to get then to the step of pretext. In order to show pretext, the plaintiffs have to show that this explanation is unworthy of credence, unworthy of belief. They failed to do that. When somebody gets up, storms out of the plant, says, I quit, and doesn't call you back for 11 days, and the reason you're given is, we don't really want to hire people back like that because we don't want our employees doing that. That's not a ludicrous explanation. That's not unworthy of credence. I'm an employer. It's very believable that somebody would not want to rehire an employee who acts like that. And as another distinguishing feature, what we have ultimately here, when you get to the end of the day, the only thing the plaintiff has shown at best is that there is one person. They could dig up one person who maybe arguably received more lenient treatment, although that person didn't say, I quit, and storm off the job and have no contact with the employer for 11 days. Ultimately, all you have is one comparator. And as this court has held, in order to carry this kind of case, in order to make your case, and the case I'm citing was where they actually, this court reversed a jury verdict, so that's actually a much harder burden to do. And this court said that it's the plaintiff must demonstrate more than occasional leniency towards other employees who had engaged in conduct of a similar nature and who had not suffered the adverse employment action. Incomplete or arbitrary comparisons reveal nothing, and that's all that we're left with here, is the mere fact that one person maybe was treated a little bit differently, couldn't find anybody else, and that one person that they're comparing certainly did not engage in the same behavior of walking off the job and not having any, I quit, better not leave, I quit, doesn't call anybody for 11 days. And that the reasons given by the employer that they just don't want people quitting and walking off the job, that's simply not unworthy of credence. It's very believable. This court has said over and over again that it will not sit as a super personnel department that is not going to second-guess every employment decision. And that is what the plaintiff is asking this court to do now. The fact of the matter is she quit her job. She left for 11 days, had no contact with the employer, and as Mr. Salvain's testimony on page 42 of Pernod Ricard's appendix indicates, his concern really was with people storming off the job and quitting. He didn't like it when they walked off the job either, but he saw a difference. And that is not a statement that is unworthy of credence. It's not unworthy of belief. For this court to disbelieve that would be to substitute this court's decision for the decision of the employer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Smith, you have a minute left.
I want to address, in the brief time I have left, the fact that Thomas Johnson was a decision John Salvain made that set a bad precedent. He brought back a very undesirable employee who had significant conduct problems. Ms. Johnson did not have those kind of conduct problems, and so we believe that because that precedent had been set, that the explanation given for failing to rehire Ms. Johnson was pretext. And with respect to Salvain's testimony about whether he would set a bad precedent with respect to people who quit versus people who walk off the job, he actually contradicted himself in his own testimony, and that creates a jury question. And so we believe that summary judgment was granted in error in this case, and we request that we be given a chance to try this case to a jury. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. The case will be taken under advisement with the court's thanks to both counsel.